Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Explain It To Me. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lakota. I'm a board certified neurologist and epileptologist, and today we will be talking about hemorrhagic stroke. So last week we talked about ischemic stroke, which is the more common type of stroke. Today we'll be discussing hemorrhagic stroke. Now, hemorrhagic strokes are more commonly called bloody strokes. They are due to blood in the brain, and when you have blood in the brain, you have swelling, you have edema, and that disrupts flow to other parts of the brain, and that's what creates the stroke. Now, there are two different types of hemorrhagic stroke. There's two ways you can have blood in the brain. You can have an intracerebral hemorrhage, which is bleeding within the brain itself. This can be due to what we call an interparenchymal hemorrhage, which means within the parenchyma of the brain itself, you have the bleed, or due to an intraventricular hemorrhage, which is a bleed in the ventricular system. Or you can have a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is basically bleeding that occurs outside of the brain tissue within the underneath the arachnoid layer, which covers the brain. So you have an intracerebral hemorrhage and a subarachnoid hemorrhage. So intracerebral hemorrhage, again, is intracerebral within the brain, and subarachnoid is underneath the arachnoid layer of the brain, which covers the brain. Now, they also are, there are other types of brain bleeds. Those two tend to be the most common. For instance, you can also have an epidural hematoma, which is bleeding within the dura space of the brain. And the dura also is one of the coverings of the brain. You can have a subdural hematoma, which is sub underneath the dural space. So epidural and subdural hematomas are also brain bleeds, but they're not as common as subarachnoid hemorrhages. And a lot of the time, epidural hematomas and subdural hematomas happen due to trauma. So there's a trauma history there. Whereas with subarachnoid hemorrhages and intracerebral hemorrhages, you don't often have trauma. But again, everyone is different, and this shouldn't be the guideline for everyone. So the most common causes of hemorrhagic strokes, especially the intracerebral ones, or what we call cerebral amyloid angiopathy. That is something you see in an older population. As you get older, there is a protein called the amyloid protein that builds up in your blood vessels. It's just a normal part of aging. Sometimes it is accelerated, especially if you are going to be prone to certain dementias. Now, this amyloid in your blood vessels does make that blood vessel weaker, so it's more prone to bleeding. So that is one cause of having intracerebral hemorrhage. Another cause is having a blood vessel that's bleeding, such as an aneurysm or an arteriovenous malformation. An arteriovenous malformation is when there's like a jumbled up tangle of blood vessels that are just the way you were born. Usually nothing that you've done has caused this tangle of blood vessels. It's just a congenital condition, and eventually it bleeds. And then aneurysms, of course, again, there can be a genetic component to aneurysms, but sometimes it is just congenital, meaning you're born with it. Nothing you did has caused this to happen. So those are big causes of hemorrhagic strokes. Now, subdural hemorrhages, or not subdural, I'm sorry, subarachnoid hemorrhages, also can happen spontaneously. Again, sometimes there is head injury, but not as much as you see in subdural hematomas and epidural hematomas. But subarachnoid bleeds sometimes just happen spontaneously. You can have a subarachnoid aneurysm that also bleeds. But usually these headaches cause severe thunderclap headaches and the worst headache of your life. So if you're having a thunderclap, worst headache of your life, emergency room right away, because it's possible that this is happening to you. Of course, just like with an ischemic stroke, early recognition is super important. For the most part, you're going to have the same symptoms. You're going to have the hemiplegia, weakness of one side or the other, weakness of the face, numbness. You're going to have loss of tone on one side or the other. That FAST guideline is still applicable here, but unfortunately, time is important for hemorrhagic strokes as well, But there is no TPA or a clot buster therapy we can give because there is no clot. But what we can do is the sooner that we find out that there's a bleed in your brain, the better we can watch you. We can control your blood pressure. We can admit you to the neurology floor, make sure you're being monitored. If you're on a blood thinner, we can stop that and, discuss alternatives with you. Things like that are going to be really important in the setting of hemorrhagic stroke. The workup of hemorrhagic stroke is going to be similar to that of ischemic stroke. Well, most people or most doctors draw the same labs, but there are going to be some differences. For instance, the bottom line of all strokes is to figure out why you had it in the first place. Whereas with ischemic stroke, you're going to look for a clot or in how a clot got there. For hemorrhagic stroke, you're going to figure out why the person started bleeding. More often than not, hypertensive hemorrhage is a big thing where high blood pressure has caused the bleeding, in which case you would need to talk to someone about optimizing their blood pressure regimen, getting them plugged in with the primary care provider, and things like that. Now, if there's a ruptured aneurysm or a ruptured arteriovenous malformation, that tangle of blood vessels, time does become important because we need to get you into the emergency room. We need to get you onto a neurosurgeon who can do some coiling and try to shut that aneurysm up. And maybe even do surgery to relieve some of that edema or swelling that's building up in your brain. That's important as well. Because remember, you're going to have inflammation and swelling anytime there's blood irritating that brain matter. And other than that, like I said, we watch the blood pressure. Anyone who's had any kind of surgery to the head or any stroke goes to the ICU for monitoring. A lot of the time with ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes, seizures are a possibility, which is my specialty, which is how I often come across these cases. And we can discuss that in detail in a whole other podcast episode. But realistically, these bloody strokes are the ones that are going to have the most likelihood of having seizures. And usually, seizures that happen within the first 24 hours of having a stroke of any kind do not often progress to epilepsy because what that seizure is saying is, hey, my brain's irritated. I don't like it. I'm going to act out. So that's basically your brain acting out and you have a seizure. Once your brain heals up, that seizure never happens again. Again, this is not for everyone. What is more concerning is if it's been weeks after your injury and you have scar tissue, your brain's healing up nicely, and then you have a seizure. That is a little more concerning because that suggests that your neural networks of the brain have somehow been disrupted, that stroke has had more long-term effects, and therefore a late seizure after a stroke is always more concerning, and about 90% of the time will progress to epilepsy. And bloody strokes or hemorrhagic strokes are more prone to having that epilepsy outcome. So a lot of people on or a lot of people with hemorrhagic strokes will end up on anti-seizure medications. And that's about it. I think, the big things, key points with hemorrhagic strokes is they can present like ischemic strokes. Sometimes there's risk factors that we know of, like high blood pressure, but sometimes there really isn't, especially if you have an aneurysm or these blood vessel malformations. But the key thing is early discovery, right? Because we want to control your blood pressure, we want to control your cholesterol. If you have diabetes, that can affect blood vessels as well. We want to control that. If you're on a blood thinning medication, we would need to stop that temporarily while you have an ongoing bleed in your head. We want to do multiple scans to make sure the bleeding is stable, get you into surgery if we need to. And overall, hemorrhagic strokes tend to do a little better than ischemic strokes in terms of recovery, but anyone who's had a big stroke will need acute rehab afterwards to get better. And I think that's it. If there's any further questions, you can definitely let me know. But in general, that is hemorrhagic stroke in a nutshell. I hope this was helpful, and we'll meet again either next week or in a couple of weeks to discuss TIAs or transient ischemic attacks, aka mini strokes. Thank you so much. Have a good week.
How you know, man? How you know, man?